Well, let's go ahead and get started. We're not able to approve the meetings from last month or last quarter because we don't have a quorum. So we'll pass off on that. Excuse me for a sec. Definitely want to welcome our guests here to our meeting. Laura, thanks for coming in person. Good to see you.
Hi, everybody.
All right, let's move on to updates. So, Melissa, solid waste enforcement.
I haven't been in the swing yet and let Amber pull it up and go from here. Hey, everybody. Good to see you, Julie. That's just who we are. Me and Kimberly. Kimberly's here today too, on the sidelines.
Just in a little box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, Melissa Sutton, Solid Waste Enforcement. We have wrapped up our 21-23 grant cycle. Our biennial closeout report was submitted on July 20th, so walking 11 days early, so woo-hoo, yay us. We did 131 solid waste facility inspections, 92 permitted facilities, and 38 exempt facilities over the biennium. We inspect our permitted facilities quarterly and our exempt facilities annually. That's where those numbers, why they differ. Our new Clark County facilities, the Spanium, with the City of Battleground Stormwater Decamp Facility, which you all remember enjoying that process. Thank you for that. And then we did conditionally exempt facilities as well. City of Battleground, they had an exempt for their piles initially until we could get them all worked up for their actual permit. Three Kings Environmental, doing business as Majestic Industrial Center. They were approved just this spring, and Paper People relocated to a new facility, our new location. We resolved 286 complaints, and we received 279 complaints. I don't know where the other seven went because I only have four active complaints, so I can't figure that out. But
there's all.
Yeah. Yes. They were absolved in our database. We have our new 23-25 grant cycle. Amber can share this PowerPoint if you guys care about all of the fancy numbers. The total cost, it's really small from here, but $464,395.93, I think. And part of that, we do a 25% match, so that's where all of those numbers work out. For Q2 of 2023, I inspected 12 solid waste handling facilities, and then one exempt facility. We had gotten a complaint about McFarland's bark, an odor complaint that we referred over to Southwest Clean Air. They went out, did an inspection, didn't find a violation. Derek Brackett from Ecology came down because it's an exempt facility. They technically have regulatory oversight for enforcement. And he and I also did not observe any violations, but we did follow through. So, we had 34 complaints received and magically 34 resolved because I am that busy.
You are.
Yeah, you are. The Washout Salmon Creek stockpile pit that I had brought to you guys several months ago, Derek and I provided comments on their draft plan back in February. And we got nothing. So we have crickets. So they were hoping to open this summer. Clearly that is not going to happen. I'm sure when they submit something, they will want it quickly. That's usually how it works. So it's not emergent at this point. So I don't know if they're going to submit. I don't know if they elected not to pursue it. They just haven't communicated at all. So we're letting a sleeping dog laugh.
Can I ask another question about that site?
Yes.
Do we have any input about the fact that it's kind of a crazy place to point it? Or is that kind of not in our purview?
It is not in our purview.
Thank you.
Our purview is, does it meet the solid waste regulation?
Okay.
Does it, if there are environmental concerns or public health concerns or solid waste handling concerns, that we bring those to light?
Well, if you say public health concerns, just in the sense that it's a, as possible, I wouldn't want to see traffic and people get wrecks and things like that. But I guess I just look at it and I go, don't tell me that Washington State DOT doesn't own, you know, have some location that's better than that.
Yeah, but that would, all of this traffic and land use, all of those come from community development to work through the SEPA process.
Right.
And not under public health purview.
So right.
Which is the intent.
Who knows? Maybe that's why you never heard back about that. Maybe.
Potentially.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is a portion of the process is for them to go through a SEPA that is dedicated toward this permitting process.
Yeah.
They alluded early in the conversations that they had SEPA approval, but I think it was just random SEPA approval and not necessarily for solid waste handling, since they already had it before we told them to get it. So I'm not really certain how that's going to pan out from the, or if, you know, if they can do mitigation for the traffic and address that.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah. So no update. This is a little bit of heartburn for me. Keystone Contracting, Circle C Rack, the John Van Vessel property. I think I brought this to you last week as well. Ecology Stormwater folks were out last April of 22, and Derek Brackett and I went out August of 22. They were told at that point that they needed a solid waste exemption for the wood waste piles and waste piles of concrete and asphalt and a whole plethora of other things that are going on out there. They have an occupied RV, holding tank that the sewage is going into. So our on-site team is working on it. Code enforcement's involved in the occupied RV. They've built some structures out of storage containers. So we're kind of multifaceted in everything. Ecology has been out subsequently and identified that they have elevated pH from the runoff of the crushed concrete that they're using as road base. So I don't know that we could permit them as a solid waste handling facility, but in March, Ecology turned that over to Public Health because they have not applied for the solid waste exemption, and subsequently, because of the exceedances of pH in the runoff, they no longer qualify for the solid waste exemption, so they would need a solid waste handling permit. We haven't heard from the property owner. We've heard from someone who claims to be a consultant, but we don't have anything that shows that they have legal means to communicate with us or vice versa. So we're kind of at a standstill. So we're working with our prosecuting attorney, our health officer, Dr. Melnick, and Roxy Emmel, as well as Kimberly, to try to figure out our next steps in that section. So we are working through enforcement. We have issued a notice of violation, but we just need to. They sent us communication that it's good. It's gone. They're not going to do that anymore right now and want us to kind of go away, but we want to make sure that we go on site and verify that they're in compliance, because that's how solid waste enforcement works. Trust. So I'm working on my trust issues that I have. So we're working through legal counsel to try to find those next steps.
When will the reinspection be?
We met as recently as this week, and our legal counsel is looking at legal options that we may have.
Sorry, I'm just playing on the whole, you know, we promise we'd stop doing it. Yeah, show me.
Yeah. So we need to have legal access.
Right.
What's the remedy, if you will, that's public health or apologies? I mean, is it a managed and control and treat the discharge, or to remove the source of the pH and whatever else is leaking? You know, obviously if you have high pHs, you know, it's not just pH, you have other things that are leaching out of that as well that are contributing.
So in the notice of violation that we issued, in May. We had given them until June 9th to remove all solid waste that they had stored on the property and properly dispose of that solid waste, which would then eliminate the need for them to have a solid waste handling permit if they didn't have the piles, and to cease acceptance of such material at the property, effective immediately, or by June 9th to make an appointment for a pre-application meeting with community development to apply to begin the process for a solid waste handling permit, and they have not done that. So the re-inspection would be to verify that they've removed the piles and aren't continuing to bring material. Yeah, next slide. Then I just have some pictures for you. So this is the wood waste pile that they had. They have a grinder on site. In the lower left-hand corner, you can see asphalt. They also had a big bin of scrap metal.
And this was all material that was brought in.
Yes. And then when Ecology reinspected, so in August, they sent me a picture that said, see, we got rid of all the scrap metal. Then in April, Ecology went back out, and that's when they found their elevated pH, and they identified this interesting structure that code enforcement is interested in, the structural stability and engineering of that, and they observed additional more scrap metal on the property.
It's an ag bin. It's an exempt ag bin.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. That's
is this a business thing that we're figuring out?
So the parcel that all of this is stored on is owned by a single individual, or a couple, John Van Vessen and his partner. Adjacent parcels are owned by Keystone Properties, which is where the occupied RV is located. And then the lower portion of the locked gate is owned and operated by Road Brothers, who's under a DNR, Department of Natural Resource Land Reclamation permit. So there's multiple parties involved. Not all of the parties always agree with one another. So we're working through a lot of that from a legal perspective too, and rights, and making sure that everyone gets to see what they need to see and enforcement
process.
Does anybody have any questions?
Or
it's fun. It's exciting.
Yeah.
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Melissa. All right. Solid waste operations,
Joelle. Okay. So most of my updates are going to revolve around the solid waste management plan, but we're talking about that a little bit later. So I'm going to leave that on the side for now. We did a work session with council on July 26th. There was an article in the Columbian, I think yesterday, about that work session too. So just wanted, you know, just, we are doing outreach to all the cities to start to get feedback from them on their interest in the regional system study and the ownership options, the recommendations that you all voted on and have been talking about. So, that work has begun. It's in progress, and I think by November we'll have a lot more to report back about that. Speaking of the regional system study, we completed it. So we were talking about that study in SWAC for what, 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Longer. And so that's really an accomplishment, and I wanted to mention that we can print some. For if you would like a printed copy, you know, a bound copy, you can order those from the print shop. So let us know. I'll send an email out to SWAC too. So, you know, if you can't attend SWAC in November to pick them up, you can arrange to pick them up with Amber. But it's a great study. There's so much information in there, and I want to keep promoting it. If you're more of you want to just go off electronic version, it's on our website. It's been on our website since June 30th. I keep sending links to it because so much information and questions that are being asked are in that study, and or at least referenced in it. One thing that came up at council was that they really wanted us to do a deeper dive into what works and what doesn't work in terms of ownership structures around Washington. So we're going to be working with our council to figure out what other information they want, and we anticipate doing another RFP for another study exclusively on ownership. So I'll be looking for feedback from SPAC too on what that, what we might want to include in that scope of work. We also completed the grant closeout for the LaSWIFA 2021-2023 grant. Laura's here and happy to be able to say, yes, we did our homework. We completed our grant. Now we're on to the next one, and we are very close to having a signed agreement. And I think we're very close to having the draft final, but we are still fine-tuning and trying to put in a couple of new tasks and make sure that we have it all dialed in before it's all signed and sealed. But Laura's here to answer questions if anybody has questions about the current SWIFA grant and what's in it. Other than that, our team has done pretty much a record amount of RFPs already this year. We completed an RFP for the engineering work at Leitner. That is a huge contract with a huge scope of work. SES engineers was previous contractor. They're the current contractor. They were also awarded the new contract, so we're excited to continue. They've done great work for us. We continue to do great work. So we'll be finalizing that contract and bringing it to council in the next month. We also completed an RFP for triennial inspections of the transfer station. And that was another huge scope of work, huge RFP. We had Julie on the panel of evaluators. So that contract is almost finalized, and that will also be going to council. So that's also exciting that we'll be hopefully doing that first inspection the last quarter of this year or the first quarter of next year on the transfer station. Other than that, CRC contract negotiations are still ongoing. Our collection contract we're extending it through an amendment, and that should be finalized this week or early next week, and then we'll be working on the interlocals with Lip Center and Yakul. So that is it for updates.
Perfect. Solid Waste Education and Outreach, Sarah.
She is not here. She is on vacation. We did include updates in a packet, so we can, if you want to read some of them, or we can just kind of send it out and say, hey, these are the updates for her team. I don't have anyone from her team to give updates for us, unfortunately.
Yeah, since we're kind of short on members, let's go ahead and just send it out electronically.
Yeah, so we have them, and you'll get it, if you didn't already, you'll get it in an email.
Perfect. City of Vancouver, Julie.
Hi. Good evening. I'll keep our updates brief. We wrapped up our spring coupon program in June and got the tallies in July. The total cost for the program hovered just below $80,000. That covered the disposal costs for yard debris, which we brought in about 6,300 cubic yards of yard debris and collected 1,666 tires from residents, redeeming over 3,500 coupons. And that program is just for city customers with active garbage service, providing 2 yard debris coupons and 1 tire disposal coupon. And it's July and August, and we're already planning for the fall. This fall coupon season, planning work's already started in drafting those coupons that go out to the entire region, including through Clark Regional Wastewater District's newsletter. I think in August, late August, early September, those customers receive the coupon, which effectively starts October 1st through December each year. It'll be included in the fall mailer from Waste Connections, neighborhood flyers, and other outreach that the city and county public works partner on and with public health do. So we won't see you again. By the next quarterly meeting, you'll be mid-coupon season, but happy to provide those for anyone that would like those as well in the next WAC meeting. And we anticipate an RFP for yard debris receiving and processing services very soon. And those vendors on contracts are the ones that support the above-mentioned coupon programs, but also yard debris collected from city solid waste programs, other programs we deliver to our neighborhoods, and then city operations. And then one thing to share, I know previous SWAC members really enjoyed attending recycling trainings when we held those for neighborhoods and residents, community. We call it Recycle U in collaboration with Waste Connections educators and the county's outreach staff. There will be some in-person events returning this fall, so if SWAC members are interested in those in-person opportunities to listen and see how others learn about recycling or or presented information about recycling. I'm happy to provide those dates that are in person. Downtown Library will be September 7th, and the Cascade Park Community Library in the center of the city will be October 3rd, with additional virtual trainings planned in collaboration with other outreach activities going on in the fall quarter. And then I just wanted to highlight, we had our first AmeriCorps focused on a very special project called the Litter Stewards Pilot Project with volunteers collecting litter in the city. That project started really as a brainchild and a pilot during the pandemic when we were hearing strong concerns from our community about litter. And this past year, basically October through August, we had an AmeriCorps member who served focusing on litter stewards and supporting the volunteers and really growing it from a pilot to a program with legs. And we're really proud of that AmeriCorps work and have determined that we want to continue that project into the next year. So we'll have a new AmeriCorps that will join us on September 1st. But they wanted to share that they trained 46 volunteers in their 9-month term of service, which included a total of 113 trained volunteers that are supported ongoing by AmeriCorps. And they conducted 13 organized events. So litter stewards can either be self-led and equipped and trained by AmeriCorps, or if they like to collaborate and go on litter pickups together, those 13 events were organized by AmeriCorps. They collected roughly 2,900 pounds, or a ton and a half, of litter in just the city. So that's quite a bit of material. So we're grateful for the service of our AmeriCorps, but also the volunteers that are interested in acting on litter. And looking forward to another year of more litter removal. So that's all from Vancouver. I'll pause if you have questions. Hearing none.
Julie, we can just send those coupons to Joelle so she can disperse them.
Yes, of course. They are also, you know, I'll put them in your mailbox, Jason. You get a lot as a SWAC rep. You can hand them out like candy too, right? No, but yeah, they will go to the county staff, yes.
Okay, perfect. And then, yeah, I feel like I know there's a lot of uses, but I still feel like there's a lot of people that are not familiar with them and just finding different avenues to make sure they're aware of that option.
To dispose of leaves for free, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, certainly. It's a 20-year-old program, but even so, it's still, you meet people that still find out about being new. So we're happy to take advice on how you want outreach, especially the SWAC reps, when you represent specific sectors or community members. If you hear opportunities, we're happy to give you hard copies and or help get the word out. It is a regional program, but led out of the city of Vancouver in collaboration with Public Works Department. So sometimes they might not hear it if it says Vancouver on it, but it does say Clark County, and we do work to distribute the information across the entire region.
No, absolutely. I appreciate that. All right, Derek, you're up, bud.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Sorry, I'm driving right now, and I missed some of you earlier because I had to get a flat tire fixed so I could drive today. But kind of a side note, I'm up and heading up to Tacoma right now for a Waste Connections regional equipment rodeo where we celebrate some of our best equipment operators, and one of our equipment operators out of Central Transfer in Vancouver, whose name is Alex Ricketts, was beat out some other equipment operators from Southern Washington and Northern Oregon to qualify for this event tomorrow up in Tacoma. So he's going to be competing against people from Alaska, some other parts of Washington, Idaho, Montana, California, and Oregon to see if he can be the Western Region Operator of the Year. So that's kind of a fun event for one of our employees. And we do it for our drivers as well. This just happens to be for our equipment operators. On the business side of things, transfer stations, not much to report other than kind of normal daily fun of operations. Volumes for the month of July were down about 3% year over year on the garbage side of the business. And residential recycling continues to track about 7 to 8% down on volumes, what we collect at the curb. So definitely a slowdown in purchasing habits and disposal habits of the community. And one of the big pieces we're also seeing is a lot less construction and demolition activity, including roofing materials. So we're seeing a lot lighter loads come in. Commodities continue to move well. So paper, cardboard, everything's moving out the door. It's just very sluggish pricing, kind of similar slowdown mills that create the material out of our recyclables are high in inventory right now, so they're paying low prices for all of our commodities. So commodity prices continue to be pretty suppressed, and we're not hearing anything great in the future. A mill, one of the Westrock mills in Tacoma, announced that it's closing this month. Just kind of a surprise closure. It was an old, antiquated mill. It's not a huge loss, but anytime you see those closures, it kind of makes you wonder what's going on and what the impact might be on future pricing for some of our commodities like paper products. And then on the collection side of the company, same general story, sluggish volumes, but good home growth. So kind of a weird combination. More routes, but less material to pick up. Makes way a little over halfway with our automation project in the county. We've got, we were automating about 70,000 homes this year in the urban growth area. And we've got, I want to say, I think we're doing route number 7 this week of rolling out carts. And we have 13 total routes that we were trying to accomplish this year. The biggest challenge we're having right now, our cart vendor's done a great job, but our truck vendor, Peterbilt and Labrie, they were supposed to deliver trucks in April, and we still have not seen one of those trucks. So we're having to kind of cobble things together with a hodgepodge of trucks and borrowed a couple from other districts to keep the rollout moving forward. We're hoping to see the first of those trucks arrive at our site either tomorrow or Monday of next week, so we can get it into service, and then we should see some more of them start to trickle in. But we had ordered 14 trucks for the project, and you know, with the of course the soft guarantee, we would get them by April at the latest. And I don't know when we'll see all 14 at this point, but we'll make it work in the end. And I think the project's gone pretty well. We are seeing a little bit of a spike in hold times at the call center. We were a little over 2 minutes in the month of July, but not what we saw last year. We're good on staffing, and I think that's helped. And in general, most of the questions revolve around when will I get my cart? So, and that's a pretty quick call. That's all I have.
All right. And also want to personally thank you for hosting the tours of all the transfer stations.
Thank you.
It was very educational, and I enjoyed myself. And then try not to have too much fun at the rodeo, because I know those are such boring parties, after parties and all that stuff. So.
Hey, Derek.
Yeah. Very boring. Yeah.
I want to echo what Jason said. The tour was great, informative. Appreciate you taking out the time to do that, and your guys and people working there too, kind of having to work around us while we Google and all. And but yeah, it's impressive. Appreciate that. On kind of a related note regarding to the transfer station, do you have any? Not to put you on the spot, but any preliminary info on any, I know that there was a container fire possibly at West Van, if there was a source determined by that.
We're travel fast. We weren't even in the newspaper for that. Yes, we did have we had a container fire yesterday. I don't bore you guys with all the fires we have because it's kind of a unfortunate part of the business, but you know, a couple times a week we have some form of a fire that we're putting out. And this one was in a compactor container. So it had been garbage that had been compacted at Central. The truck and trailer had left the facility and the driver noticed some smoke coming out of the back of the, container. He called his dispatch, and then we directed them to go to our West Van yard instead of Tidewater, where he's heading right across the street, easier for us to manage. So we called the fire department. Fire department arrived and followed the truck in, and then we immediately tipped the material onto the ground in the lower yard at West Van, and the fire department was able to hose it all down as it came out. We weren't able to get to the root cause of it. I think most of the times we assume it's some form of a battery. We're far enough away from 4th of July that it's not a firework, I wouldn't think, but it's more than likely a battery situation. And once you start running over it with a heavy loader or compacting it, it's all the dry material. You might have a pretty good fire. No damage really to the container, a little bit of singeing of the metal, but really nothing major. We were able to douse it and then reload it this morning. So, but the fire department typically, you know, they can't get to the bottom of the problem. They just kind of write it up to likely a battery fire.
Thanks, Derek. Appreciate it.
All right. Drive safe, Derek. All right. On to hazardous waste collection projects.
So we've been doing some exciting stuff with hazardous waste this year, and this is just kind of an overview of what we've been doing. So we have three household hazardous waste facilities in the county. Two are in Vancouver, one's in Washougal, so residents in Northern County don't have easy access to the facilities. They have a longer drive. So we started coordinating events in that community to collect waste just at a one-day drop-off site. So we did events in Washington, Yakult, LaCenter, and Ridgefield this spring. And hazardous waste are things like motor oil, batteries, sharps, clean chemicals, pesticides, all that good stuff. This is the summary of what we collected. So the three events was almost 30 tons of hazardous waste, 521 drop-offs, so yeah, over 500 households. That averages 133 pounds per person, which was really incredible to witness at each site. Just truck that's maxed out on space completely with another guy following behind them full of hazardous waste, so it's definitely a need in the community. And I put some, I put pie charts for each event. So Ridgefield paint was the biggest. I wish Kim were here because she's the paint care for the region. So some paint, propane, that non-repro liquid, that's like a, it was an unknown, and they had to test it, so I'm not sure what the test result came back on that, but it's used oil antifreeze. Ridgefield had a lot of participation, but lower waste per person. Yakult was stuck with a lot of participation and a lot of waste, so they had more variety, really latex paint, number one, antifreeze, used oil, were big ones, paint-related material that would be like solvents or paint strippers. And then LaCenter was our last event. It was absolutely insane. Just to summarize, we really kicked off the or end of the year on a high note with just broke records of how much waste we collected, but it had similar more types of waste that we collected, like text paint, batteries, oil, pesticides. So,
is this by weight?
Yes,
this is by weight. Okay, well, no wonder why that's the batteries jump up there.
Yeah, and like the fluorescent tubes are all at the end, but there were tons of those. They just don't weigh very much, so it's just a little snapshot. Observations at the event. So the data helps us know kind of what people have, what they're stockpiling. But just kind of what I observed at the site, a lot of the paint and oil, a lot of old containers, really rusty. Some of them had like grass growing on top, and people noted that they had been storing this in their shed for 10 years. Lots of comments like that. So it's definitely needed, but, yeah, we sent out postcards to 5 mile radius of our site to everyone, to every household, just notifying of the event and what you could bring. And that was really successful and brought in a lot of people. And it's people that we don't normally engage with, but they're not on our Facebook or Green Neighbors blog and all that. So it was a good outreach opportunity. We handed out our recycle rate app. search engine cards to everyone. And we were also doing the solid waste system survey at the time, so we passed out flyers to that. We got a lot of good feedback. Overall, people were really happy about all the events and, yeah, comments about being there for 10 plus years.
I've got a quick question for you about that. It's been forever since I've sent a postcard. I know that they're not, the postage isn't the same as standard mail. What is standard mail like? Like, what, 47 cents or?
Something like that.
You probably know where I'm going. What was your total cost just on postage on snail mail?
It was like $80 per event. There's nothing. There's like some like lower rate.
Right. I know there is for postcards. I'm wondering, you know, what was the county's total spend on postage?
It was
$15,000,
maybe?
No.
$80 total for 5,000 postcards.
Yeah.
And that's why we're like, why are we not doing
it for all the time? I take that back. I probably remember this step as of a letter. So, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
I reached out to the mail shop. I was like, is this the right amount? I was expecting, like,
$80, how many people?
Yeah,
you sent out how many postcards?
2,000 to
5,000. Yeah, I think it was in thousands. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was thinking it had to be, 30,000, 40,000 people. So,
yeah. It was just a 5-mile radius of the event.
Oh, okay, got that. I see.
And I think we did it by zip code.
Okay.
Is that right?
The GIS.
Okay.
Created a list. Yeah.
That makes
sense. This was sort of we were just kind of testing it out. Like, is this going to increase engagement? And it worked. And we're like, this is a pretty low cost. And look at the impact.
Right.
So, yeah. We're
going to do that again. If that was $80, I'd be like, okay, let's go four times that much.
Then. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, then, was there a social media post?
Oh, yeah, but it's like, some of these these families, and they just don't engage that way, And so, we're hitting it from all directions.
Yeah, no, 100%, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about, and forgive me if you already did this, but, Boost and Sponsor.
We have our whole PIO team, like our public information officers team that, helps us coordinate all that stuff.
Right, so I agree with the 5-mile radius for postcards, maybe expand it a little bit next time, but then also setting the radius way further for social posts.
Yeah, I think
I see
those are
we get that. We get so much chucked down. It's incredible. And that's why cards are typically the first time to go. But put it on Facebook or Insta or something like that. Guaranteed it's going to come across at some point.
I wish Sarah was here because she could speak more to how they run but they have their own website for each of their outreach programs, and then they engage with our PIO team to overcome the Facebook posts and the social media stuff. So I feel like that was all dialed in. We were sort of like, well, we need to kind of go a little bit more old school to kind of get engagement in these areas that we don't really touch as much.
Yeah, awesome. Next question is, you need to print it in a couple different languages too.
Yeah, that was the thought. Maybe
next time
do a bigger postcard type
with
different languages on it.
Some Russian and
Spanish.
Spanish in there,
yeah.
So I just had a question about how much capacity you have to increase the number of people that came. I mean, was there space for that? Consideration, right?
Bigger location, right?
Yeah, locations are difficult for those areas, especially the center. The school parking lots are the biggest sites that they have, and we're still backing up traffic all the way downtown.
Yeah.
It's not ideal. So the solutions would be hire a bigger crew with the hazardous waste company. We contracted with ACT at Advanced Chemical Transport, and they had a crew of about 7 collecting waste, and they can do bigger crews as needed or longer events. So we've got plans to account for that next
round. We're also looking at the data in the sense of we haven't done one in La Center in a while. And so when someone's saying, hey, I've been storing this in my garage for 10 years, we're like, well, is it going to be like this next time? Where are we going to have less? So, we definitely, we're doing twice as many collection events in our grant than last time. So we did three, right? We're doing three.
We did then four over the last cycle.
Which was 2 years. We did four in 2 years. We're going to do six. So yes, not exactly.
Now, just a quick question for you. By the way, the pie charts are phenomenal. The question I have is, how much did the data collection slow down the throughput? And is there a chance that maybe we just say, you know what, there's too many people, let's just start getting this stuff up, we'll collect data later.
Everything is measured after the event once.
Oh, and one, yeah, so it's just pull through, yank it out, and tell them, have a nice day.
And our contractor does a really nice job of collecting data and submitting it to us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jeff still has to manipulate it, but they, at least they're really good with it. And I didn't think it took them that long to even get it after the event, maybe a month or
so. No, they've got it kind of automated. Yeah.
Well, if you guys are looking to do one in Brush Prairie, let me know in any place.
Yeah,
but the problem is you got to get through Central. So.
One question: what were the hours?
We were open for 4 hours. It was 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
So what? 4 hours.
Typical.
12 hours for three sites, and how much waste in pounds did?
About 30 tons.
30 tons.
Nine to one.
In 12 total hours.
It's pretty amazing the day after all the waste is packed up and you can leave. Are there any other questions about the events?
I have a comment from the peanut gallery. Leanne Martinez in our emergency preparedness group, they worked a lot with identifying sites throughout the county to move through traffic and having good traffic flow and having MOUs with those entities. So like the fairgrounds, I know they could also go to CCR, they could also go to West End, but like fairgrounds, you can move people through.
Yeah, we're gonna work on interlocals and similarly to how her team does that this year.
We're checking with Leanne about sites that they've already got approval for and schools that they have approval for. And I know for the community, even though you may live Brush Prairie, it's close to CCR, but you don't necessarily think to put all your chemicals in your car to drive there or to deal with the hassle of it or figure out where things go. It's sometimes easier to go to an event like this. So I think having these community events and putting our name out in the community, I think is good, especially if the tons to dollar ratio is cost effective for sure.
It is it is a good service. We have been doing big outreach campaigns on the hazardous waste facilities just to get more awareness of those permit options as well, but that's been happening. I'm sure that's in our update in those bullet points.
One more question.
Sure.
So 30 tons and 12 combined hours, if I get that right. I was trying to look here. Do we know offhand how much is recycled at the transfer stations in a day or a week? How did this effort compare to what is typically done during the operation hours over the weekend
We were just touring West Van with Laura and Melissa. I feel like we just touched on this, like how many tons a day.
They were talking about their batteries.
Oh, we were talking about batteries. That's right. Okay.
I've got data from last year. I could compare the annual data to our event was. Let me get back to you on that. So that's a good
question. I'm just curious because and really where I'm going with that is just trying to, I don't think we need to promote or convince ourselves that this was a success, but I mean really to put it in perspective, 30 tons in just three small communities in a 4-hour window, I think that's pretty significant. I think it's telling too that number one, people are holding on to this stuff, maybe don't know that what to do with it, got a flyer, got a different type, a snail mail flyer as opposed to digital age.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things here that I think we can look at and really use
use this as like a benchmark and kind of a springboard to, you know, to more of these events.
Because,
you know, having to deal with traffic is difficult just to dispose of hazardous waste. You're still in that line. Seems like this was a convenient and successful program.
I had asked about, you know, the time frame. What day of the week was this on these events? I mean, do you remember Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, whatever? I was wondering. It was a weekend, okay.
And I would just add that from my perspective, seeing lots of counties do these events, the rural HHW collection events tend to be super popular everywhere. I mean, I don't know that your numbers are going to drop a ton over time.
Yeah, maybe.
Just saying, it is a great service that is really popular, has been popular broadly.
Yeah, and it's funded through the ecology grant, so that's how we get it going. I'm not sure where
if we have two contractors out there, one for paint care and the other for the rest of the HHW?
No, ACT is one of the paint care contractors, so we didn't have to pay for paint. That was all through paint care programs. So. I better move on to batteries. I'm not sure what time it is. 6:50.
Yep, okay. You're right ahead.
Okay, good.
I need to excuse myself for a second.
Sure. Where to start? I copied this from a different PowerPoint, so I'm not sure where I am. Okay, so this year we're setting up a battery recycling project. So Derek spoke of the fire earlier, that fires are a problem in all of our collections. We have them in the trucks, dumpsters, at the transfer station, and landfill, in transport, everywhere. And it's also batteries are increasing a lot. We need more drop-off points for batteries, basically. It's lithium-ion batteries that kind of explode once they're damaged. They're also really difficult fires to extinguish, but lithium can exacerbate fires, which is why you can find a picture of a burnt-out Tesla really quickly, because they just have to let it burn sometimes. And we have limited drop-off options for batteries in our county. So right now it's just the hazardous waste facility, which always looks for batteries, and Home Depot and Lowe's operate their own private collections of rechargeable batteries. So this project has been in the works for a while. This year, a statewide fire stewardship law passed, but we've decided to continue with this project. So the statewide law is going to provide drop-off points for batteries throughout the state. But their collections don't start for 4 years. They start July 2027, so we're still going to do this to build the gap until then. And batteries are a type of hazardous waste that's known as universal waste. I won't get into too much detail, but it means we can recycle them through mail, which is really good and not the same for other hazardous waste. So we are setting up volunteer retail sites, community sites with these recycling boxes, which I'll describe in a bit, to collect batteries. So Club Recycle provides these boxes. You get it in the mail. It's just a box wrapped in plastic. It's got a prepaid shipping label on it. And I'll hold this up for the camera in a minute. For our virtual attendees, you kind of fold it, and then you drop batteries in. Got a plain retardant liner to keep it from bursting in the flames and transport. It comes with plastic bags, so batteries touching each other can make an electrical connection and spark a fire. So it comes with the bags to individually bag them. So we're describing that to potential sites to host our kits for us. These are being purchased by Waste Connections because they fund the hazardous waste disposal facilities, or I guess technically it's Columbia Resource Company. And our staff currently coordinating Waste Connections educators are helping promote the program. And we want to just make recycling more accessible. And this will help kind of spread out the amount of batteries. I'm sure those of you who did the tour saw the giant stockpiles of batteries that they have at the
facilities right now, and it can be quite dangerous. So these hold 40 to 50 pounds of batteries, and it's much safer than our 10, 55 gallon drums of batteries. So. So we've got a few sites that are signed up, a couple of Park Rose Hardware's, Habitat for Humanity store. We're kind of targeting those locations that already have hazardous stuff on site, and they are fully receptive to this. They understand the fire safety protocols. They'll add it to their clothing routine to check the boxes for safety. And we are going to do a big launch to the public after we get a certain number of sites. I think we're aiming for 10. We're really close. And then we'll tell people about the program. And this is really a pilot to launch it at that smaller scale. And if it's going smoothly with the sites, then we can continue to grow it over the 4 years. And then that statewide program is very similar. I imagine it'll probably still be called for recycle boxes because they're the ones that are doing the stewardship for other states, I believe. And we'll help transition any sites that want to continue collecting batteries to the statewide program. So, but any questions about that one?
What's the
go over let's go.
What's going to be the metric for evaluating its success? Is it just the volume or reduction in fires? That's part of why I asked Sarah about the fire, because I'm going to lead into this, because I was expecting that answer to be, it was probably better. Less batteries being recycled, at the transfer facilities with the increase made up through this. How are you going to have that success with it?
I guess kind of a mix. So we get data once a box is shipped in. Oh, I guess I didn't explain. So once it's full, you take it shut, and then FedEx can pick it up from your site and they ship it. No cost to participate. So when Culver Recycle gets that at their recycling facility, they take measurements of everything. They'll tell you like how many alkalines, how many lithium ions you had. So we get that data back, and we'll see if the amount that we collect at the sites can match anything that we're getting at the curbside or at the hazardous waste facilities, and try and see that grow. And I'm not sure if it'll put an impact on what we're getting at the hazardous waste facilities, just because battery waste is increasing so much that it might not put a dent in it, honestly. But there's that, and also the people that work at the site, how it's working for them. If people are bringing in too much quantity all at once, then this might not be the best option. Our guideline is going to be 10 batteries per day for a drop-off site, which is pretty common. Like the light bulb recycling is 10 bulbs. So nobody show up and fill the entire box. They'd really be directed to the permanent facilities to handle that quantity. So if problems like that happen at the sites, then we might reevaluate and come back that we're launching, see what happens, and hope for the best. And I think the more drop-off points we have, the less likely people will put it in the garbage. That's really our goal, or in the curbside recycling bins.
Jen, is there a county code right now that restricts rechargeable batteries in our garbage stream?
No. No, we don't have any hazardous waste garbage ordinances, but CRC has their own guidance at their sites, no hazardous waste in the garbage. So not as strong of a enforcement as a county code would be, but that's something we've put in the solid waste management plan to.
It would really be challenging to enforce when it's collected, when you have 600 houses collected in one garbage truck, to say that it was house 123 and not 125, and know for sure that it was that house and mixed in and traded fight them for it without a shadow of a doubt that it was that person is impossible. So there is no way that we can add it to county code to, because it's definitely not me.
Yeah, that's the impression I've gotten from other jurisdictions. It's more of a, I don't know, kind of like a, please don't do this. We can't do anything about it, but yeah. Don't. All right, cool. That's all I got.
Did you want to mention, too, about the benefit to businesses participating in this?
Sure.
Like,
yeah. Retail stores.
Spread the word.
Yes, it'll bring people in if they, you know, have batteries. Maybe they always go to this Ace, but maybe this one takes their batteries, but they'll go to this one. So. Oh, your business is environmentally friendly, and it, kind of just
important. I think we're going to have on our website, like a map of, businesses that are participating, too. So then they're getting some free promotion that they're one of the sites that take the battery. So.
As a follow-up really related to that, some businesses... Yeah, we'll have the box on display, and you know, I've seen the logos in Home Depot, and it's pretty prominent in front. Will those businesses also be responsible for, oh, it's full, we're going to tape it up and ship it, or do they call someone to pick it up? Who does that?
They just have to tape it, and then FedEx will pick it up, and most sites already deal with FedEx and UPS all the time, so.
But it's not like... The county or the city doesn't have to come and take care of it. And
yeah.
I assume they would have like several of those boxes so they can put one out when one's full.
We're sending two boxes at a time so they always have an empty backup one.
I see. So I was going to say, how does the reorder process work? I mean, once they send one, you'll have a spare, but how, you know, is there going to be a county person you notify to, you know, hey, I'm out of boxes, send me another yours?
Yeah, so... We have it set up that when they mail in a box, they get shipped an empty one.
Oh,
automatically.
Okay.
Until they opt out or have to empty.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. All right, moving on to discussion of the solid waste management plans.
All right, so I'm going to keep this kind of brief, but I open up to a lot of questions too. So on the agenda, so we had the initial comments for the June. So June 1st when we met, we had hard copies of the solid waste management plan draft. We also have electronic copies that were provided. And then we asked that all the SWAC members provide feedback on the public comment button on the form. We have the smart sheet that has all of those comments, so I'm seeing them come in, and I'm so, like, thank you so much for all the engagement. We've gotten a lot of feedback from Slack. Laura and I are going to get to go through all of those as we get deeper into our process, right? But thank you for all the engagement with this version of the draft. There were a couple questions that I got via email. Will SWAC have further opportunity to comment? And the answer is, of course, you are absolutely, you're going to be with us through this whole stage of the process. There is an official public comment period that we will say we will be promoting, and you'll be, hey, but there's also that comment button that's open now. So you can still comment, even if you didn't get all of your homework done, you can still comment and use that button. That's all. I'm getting notifications when you send a comment through our Smartsheet form. So that now we are in a new stage of the solid waste management plan update. So I know we spent a lot of time on the last draft. We're taking the draft with the revisions and the comments, and we have a new contract with Moll Foster, who is doing the design work for us. We have a work group that's working on the design of the solid waste management plan. If you want to get an idea of what we anticipate the end result of our plan looking like, you can take a peek at Tacoma Pierce's design, not their plan itself, but the design of it. That was the one that we really, really liked. It's got just a really, really nice format to it. So the next version that you see, hopefully will have that free for you in November will look a lot content. It's all about design. So reviews and the editing done. That wouldn't get put into the next draft, and it's going to look much, much different and much more beautiful. I did email everyone out a copy of this timeline that was developed by our PIO team. This is not every little detail in our grant, but this aligns with our new LaSWFA grant and one of the tasks in the grant, which is the solid waste management plan update. So when it refers to quarter one is the reference to the grant quarter one. So the grant starts off July 1st. So sometimes I had some questions about that when everyone thought, hey, why does it say quarter one when it's July? That's how the grant works. It's a 2-year grant, starts in July. So our quarter one is already kicked off. We already have that contract with Mall Foster. We're already doing that design work. We're hiring a photographer to get some new photos for our plan. We are engaged with the SEPA process. And so I anticipate having SEPA completed September 30th. So I anticipate having that to you all for review prior to the November meeting, but definitely by the November meeting. We've already completed the UTC COP questionnaire, but we're reviewing it to make sure that we don't need any additional edits. And I'm meeting with all of the cities during the month of August to begin outreach and to begin work on the interlocal agreement. So we anticipate hopefully having those all finalized by quarter two. So as you can see, we're lining up right away with what we are expecting based on the schedule. I know the timeline had been asked over and over again. I just want you to know that we didn't want to provide one until we were certain of what it looked like and what was going to be on there. This is not changing. This is with the grant. This is set in stone. We're going to be bringing this to you each time that we meet. We're going to talk about where we're at and where we need to go. There is absolutely things that can happen. We might have a delay in the interlocal agreements. There might be some unforeseen circumstance that causes some of the timeline to get stretched out. But I'm really going to keep thinking positive and stay on our deadlines. And we need to make sure that this is finalized by the end of this grant cycle. So does anyone have any questions about that or the timeline? Yep. No? Anyone online? This is also available on our website. So it looks a little small on the website. If you click on it, it'll pop open and you are able to see the text. So it's our PIO team did the graphic for us, and she did a really great job on making sure that you can just kind of glance at it, and then on the website you can click it open and expand it out. So that's pretty much where we are at right now. I'm submitting the draft with our edits and with some of the comments incorporated into it either Friday or Monday, and they're going to get to work on their design. They're going to meet with a group, work group, and then kind of give us, like, do you like A or do you like B? Do you like this? Do you like this? And so we're all excited to do that process. And we're going to work on making sure that we get the photographer scheduled and completed before the weather turns. So those are on our forefront of our minds in getting this work done. And I'm excited. I have I've already had some discussions with some of our cities about their interlocals. And so I'm hoping some of those will go very, very smoothly. And I'm anticipating bringing a staff report to council in quarter two to get approval for us to enter into those interlocal agreements.
Kyle just posted a question. What is the UTC cost assessment looking at?
Do you want to explain it, Laura?
There's a questionnaire that goes through and asks a whole bunch of questions related to that. That needs to be answered by staff and it gets reviewed. I don't have it in front of me, and I don't have a internet for that either. So I can send you more detail, but it's an assessment that looks at all of those, you know, like utility related components that
And we do have it on our website.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
Yeah, we did post it on our website. J.R. Miller completed it for us.
And UTC stands for?
Utility
Transportation
Commission. Okay, I was like, so you've thrown the acronyms around.
Yes. Just had this the other day. People were throwing these acronyms around. Like, well, you, of course, know what these mean, right?
Yeah.
Yes, for acronyms.
So yeah, I can also follow up with more information for anybody who's interested.
And you're welcome
to questions.
Yeah, and take a peek at it. I believe the one that J.R. Miller completed is it's under the appendices in our plan update.
Yeah.
So that is it for my update. Any other questions or?
Not for me. I am excited to see the revised copy of the updated
me
copy.
Too.
The prettier copy.
Yes, exactly. It's just part of our hazing to make you read those.
Right. Right. all right. Any open for any other business?
There is a and again, I don't have it in front of me, but there is a new ramp litter cleanup grant. You may have seen about that, Joel, but just want to mention it to the group where you can apply for. There's no match, up to $60,000. I forget what the total amount that's available in the state. It's being administered through the same folks who do the other litter pickup grant work, not me, and Ariana, who's worked with the county, I think, in the past, is. She just retired, so we hired somebody new. Her name's Maggie. We're excited to get her on board. But yeah, she'll be helping to administer those new grants, and the applications are open right now. So the county board, so you can take a look at that information on the ecology website.
Perfect. Any public comment? Well, I'm not sure if it's quite a record, but I'm going to call it a record.
We need to do a gavel.
Follow us, meeting adjourned.